Good morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, AA meeting on air. My name is Steve and I'm an alcoholic. We'll start our meeting with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve the common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any set, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, and neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Welcome to our meeting this morning. We have members of our fellowship in, and we'll be sharing our experience, strength and hope about our journey of recovery from alcoholism. And to start the sharing off this morning, Georgina, do you want to share?
Yep, thank you. Hi, I'm Georgina. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Georgina.
So my drinking career probably spans about 10 years. It would have started off as binge drinking when I was in my late teens. It developed into daily drinking around the time I started university, and towards the end of that I was daily drinking to blackout. I used to call myself an alcoholic. I used to think that that was enough, that I said the words and that I owned it. I used to think it was a joke. I used to think that I was the life of the party, that everything revolved around me. But towards the end there, I was basically just living to drink. I wasn't really living my life. I was just existing to get the next drink. A couple of things happened towards the end of my drinking, which really meant it was spiraling out of control. And one was that I was in a long-term relationship that ended because they wanted kids and I didn't want kids, and he wanted to travel and I didn't. And then that sort of pulled the rug from under me, and I had no security and I felt like I had no one left. But in terms of my drinking, I thought that that was a positive because it meant that I had no one to be accountable for anymore, so I could drink the way I wanted to. Which meant that I ramped it up in terms of quantity and frequency. And then I think about 8 months before I came into the rooms, my mother died, and she, I believe, was an alcoholic as well. And to watch the disease progress in someone so close to you is quite an intense experience. And so to cope with that, again, I just started drinking more than I thought I ever would, and basically just thought that that wasn't going to be my life. I was going to drink until I died, and that ended me up in hospital one night because I tried to harm myself in front of friends, and they called the police, who took me to hospital, and it was basically looking down at myself in the same hospital gown that I had to watch my mother die in, and that was quite a... It was when reality sort of sunk in, and that was when I saw the full weight and gravity of my situation. So when I had to sit down with the psych team and, you know, they started asking me about my drinking, that was the first time I could be honest, because it really did feel like there was no other option. I couldn't lie anymore and I couldn't hide from it anymore. They suggested CADS and counselling, so I did both. And at my assessment for CADS, it was suggested that I come to a meeting. So I went home, I looked up the AA website, and I found a meeting on Wednesday night, Young People in Sobriety, and I thought, yep, okay, that's going to be me. Walking to my first meeting, I was incredibly angry. I thought that I wasn't the one with the problem. I thought the world had the problem and not me, that I was a victim. But when I walked in that room and I sat down and I started listening to what people were saying, and I could see how well they were, I could see the recovery. I didn't know what recovery was, but I could see something. They had something that I wanted. And it was like a dam broke and, you know, I just started crying. I couldn't stop, but I felt like I was where I needed to be. It felt like I was home. And so after that meeting, it was suggested that I keep coming back. And so I did. And I've kept coming back ever since. And everything else that's been suggested, to get a sponsor, to start working the steps, I've done all of that. And I've been in for about 15 months now, and my life has changed incredibly. I'm no longer in the pain that I was in. I'm no longer feeling the grief that I felt. I am a lot happier with myself. I can accept who I am. I don't have to pick up a drink over the smallest things. I don't have to pick up a drink at all. Like, I can do life now. I can, you know, I can be friends with people and not just expect things from them. I bought a house and I'm not even 30, you know, things like that. All the miracles, all the promises that it talks about in the big book, that's starting to come true for me, and it's an incredible feeling. I've been through some hard times, but it always comes back around. You know, this too shall pass is something that I cling to quite strongly. And I'm a grateful alcoholic today. Just really happy that I came into these rooms and I found a way of living that doesn't mean I have to pick up a drink. So, yeah, thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Georgina. You're listening to Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship in sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. The next person to share is James. Do you want to share?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Steve. My name's James and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, James.
I guess for me, when I first started drinking, I was quite young, and the effect from alcohol was such a leveller that it should have been obvious from the very beginning that I shouldn't be putting it in my system. I sort of was one of those kids that always sort of kind of felt uncomfortable in my own skin, and alcohol was a solution for that, and it sort of became a social lubricant and allowed me to sort of, in my view, become a part of the world and sort of be the person that I thought I was always meant to be. I guess there was always at the very beginning, the other side of that was that once I started, I just couldn't stop. And I never drank socially, even though I may have drank to have that social lubricant effect. It always spiraled into more than that, and I would black out and I wouldn't be able to remember what had happened when I woke up, and I would always wake up in some kind of trouble, and very quickly there were consequences for that for me, and I just sort of brushed them aside. My relationships with my family and my friends started to get strained. They couldn't, they didn't really want to sort of put up with someone that started to sort of lie and steal and hide my drinking. As it progressed in school, my grades sort of slipped off and I stopped sort of going. I didn't really go to school to learn, and my attitude sort of started to manifest in other areas of my life very suddenly, really. And eventually my school sort of said to me, like you can leave or we can kick you out. And I chose to leave, and looking back, they really sort of did me a solid with that, because if they had kicked me out, they would have given me something to resent and hold on to. And they made it my own choice. And once I left school, my family was pretty much like, look, if you're not going to, pursue education, you have to work. And I was 18 at that point, and my drinking had got to the point where I was sort of drinking before and after social events and drinking during the day and stealing and lying to get money to sort of support the habit. And as soon as I got a job, I started stealing from the till, and just basically I wasn't a very trustworthy employee at all, and I'd show up, you know, still drunk from the night before. And I started, as soon as when I got kicked out, when I left school, I was 18 and technically in the eyes of the law an adult. And so when I got in trouble, I started getting in trouble with the police from that point on. And I would start waking up in police cells or hospitals. And, you know, my mum sort of got to the point where she knew that if I disappeared, she knew to ring the hospitals or the police cells looking for me, because that's where I'd be. And, you know, I still had this unnerving knack of being able to, I don't know, just not look at the side of that, just pretend like it was normal. Very quickly, you know, I lost all my close friends that I'd grown up with. They sort of, they didn't know what was happening or how to help me, and they just, their solution was just to distance themselves from me, which is something that I understand completely. You know, I was stealing and lying and causing all kinds of trouble with them as well, and you know, without school and friends, you know, my world was just shrinking. And I was basically just working and then getting blind drunk, and I found people that drank like me and just had the same sort of mindset as me. And very quickly my world turned into basically four walls in my room, completely isolated, and the only other people that I sort of interacted with were my family and people that I would find to just get drunk with. And I guess for me, what happened was my parents decided before I did that, you know, my behaviour was a problem, and they took it on themselves to sort of correct or fix me. And I ended up in therapy, and yeah, by that stage, my mum had kicked me out of home, and I was living with my dad, and he had a much more sort of relaxed stance on what I was doing. But even then, I sort of abused his hospitality to the point where you know, he sort of didn't want to accommodate me really anymore. You know, I was just getting into too much trouble, and there was no sort of growth or change in my life, and it was just sort of very quickly converging into something that wasn't really worth living. Well, that's how I feel looking back. And I guess it was a bit of a limbo. Like, I was just sort of alive and just the drink. There was no sort of plan or ambitions or future. Like, alcoholism very much for me is something that I believe I was born with, and you know, that higher purpose or drive was just subsumed by that desire to get completely out of it, to just switch it off. And you know, I was very much arrested in the middle of my spree by my parents' intervention. And they sort of said to me, you know, my dad said to me, you know, look, like, you can either try one of these AA meetings or NA meetings at the time. There was sort of young people's branches of them. And if you don't want to do that, then you can find somewhere else to live. And my only other, you know, the people I was drinking with were living in like halfway houses, and they were just out of prison. And I just didn't want to, you know, I was like, yeah, I'll go along with dad's plan just to appease him, keep the roof over my head, keep food in my stomach, and just carry on drinking behind his back. And, you know, he found out about the meetings because my mum decided to give me a hint prior to that when she cut out from the newspaper this ad for a treatment center and left it on my bed one day. And I went on a bender and woke up and was like, oh, shit, I'll be in, you know, I would have enraged them. So I'll just call my mum from work and just say, look, I'm going to go give this treatment center a shot. And we went along to this treatment center. You know, I was still hungover, and they were like, look, like, you know, we can't accept anyone unless you have 10 days of abstinence prior to. And the person that assessed me knew that I was just taking the piss and wasn't serious at all. But they did send me away with meetings lists, and that's how my dad sort of found them. And from that point, he sort of put that ultimatum to me, and he would drop me at my mum's house, and my mum would run me up to this meeting in Ponsonby in Auckland, New Zealand, where the young people's meeting was. And in between my dad dropping me off and my mum picking me up, I'd sprint up to the liquor store or to the local tiny house and sprint back with like drugs in my sock or like beer and stuff, and just sit in the meeting like and just like, I just had no intention of stopping whatsoever. You know, I came into those rooms with my eyes firmly on the ground, and I didn't even look at the steps on the wall. You know, people were very smiling and friendly and open and just very generous, and I didn't want to borrow it. You know, they started with the serenity prayer and they ended with it, and by the final words of that prayer, I was out the door and down the stairs. And I wasn't ready to stop, but I was in those rooms. And you know, that's looking back, that's a blessing, because slowly, what was being shared by the members in that room, the members of AA, started to sort of sink in, like, not necessarily about their drinking stories, but like how they felt when they were in the unfortunate situation of being without a drink, and like what their head was like. And they sort of said that those thoughts were crazy, and I was like, well, I think like that, and I'm not crazy. And over time, you know, I began to identify, basically, despite my attitude, and despite sort of sitting in those meetings, you know, drunk or with a horrible attitude, I was forced to sort of come to terms with, you know, some truths. And you know, I realized that, you know, I was an alcoholic. You know, I had a problem. And just prior to that, you know, a friend of mine, or like a drinking associate, basically said to me, you know, James, you know we're not normal, right? Like, you know, people don't sit in a room and just get drunk all day. And I just didn't know what he was talking about. And so, yeah, when I went to these meetings and they articulated how I was feeling and how I was thinking in such a precise way, and said that they had a problem, you know, I was like, maybe, I have a problem too. And instead of, you know, doing what's suggested and asking for help or getting a sponsor or getting a home group or anything, I just thought I'd do it my way. You know, like, I knew that I had to stop drinking because a life worth living was just slipping out of my grasp, and there was no forward movement. But I didn't want to get honest, and I didn't want to make amends or clear the wreckage away of my past or any of that kind of stuff. You know, if those promises work for you, that's fine, but for me, that kind of stuff is wishy-washy and not applicable, and it's not grounded in reality. And so, you know, I clung on to sobriety for dear life, just white-knuckling it, just turning up to meetings, taking what I needed and leaving. And by a year of doing that stuff, I was absolutely insane. Like, my head was just killing me. Like, my behaviour was just worse, if not worse, than when I was drinking. And no, I wasn't comfortable at all. You know, a lot of things immediately got better from not drinking, like going to the gym and trying to do rowing and going back to uni and all this kind of stuff. And what I know now is I was just trying to, you know, looking for a solution to a problem that, you know, I didn't really know that I had. You know, it's not that, you know, it's not the alcohol, it's the alcoholism which is in me. And you know, after a year, on my year birthday, I turned up to that meeting determined to get a sponsor. You know, I wasn't going to leave there without one. And I said to one of these people, you know, that would chase me up the road after the meetings just to say, hey, we go down to the food court afterwards if you want to come along. I said to him, you know, what's the sponsor business? And he was like, you know, I'll be more than happy to sponsor you. And at that point, I was broken. And it's the second time I've been broken. I've been broken once from, you know, the actual effect of alcohol, and once by doing it, by hanging on to my own will. And I'm grateful I came to those points, because it's not like, you know, I did everything in AA and, you know, everything is roses and there's unicorns in my backyard and stuff and everything's lovely. But it's, to me, when they say that, you know, there's a life beyond your wildest dreams, it's because, you know, life doesn't go to plan. That's why it's beyond my wildest dreams, because I couldn't think of that. If everything went to plan, then that's not beyond me. That's just my little narrow view of things. And today, you know, through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a solution that's far more than a substitute to alcohol. And I've managed to, you know, by grace of the power of the power greater than myself, you know, get in touch with that. And that's where there's sort of been, you know, a lot of pain, but a lot of growth. And you know, I don't regret my my journey thus far, because it keeps getting better. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, James. You're listening to Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship in sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. The next person to share is Lulu. Do you want to share?
Thank you, Steve. Hi, kia ora. Lulu Alcoholic.
Hi, Lulu.
Yes, my journey started very young. My sister's 21st was my vivid memory. I was 5 years of age. The house was full of people. It was Christmas time. There was a big, shiny punch bowl on the table, and it looked like orange juice to me. And people were scooping it into their glass. And I thought, oh, I'll have some of that. By the end of the night, well, what I remember, the Christmas tree ended up on the floor with me. And my sister was quite embarrassed. Her 21st and her younger sister was taking over the party. And that wasn't very good at all. From the age of 14 is probably my next introduction to alcohol. I decided to experiment with it, because I was quite a shy child. I didn't fit in. I always, you know, be a room full of people, and I was always the odd one out, until I discovered alcohol, and it gave me the Dutch courage to do what I couldn't normally. Yes. And then I got into quite a bit of trouble in my teenage years. I travelled a bit for work, and I just drank uncontrollably from the word go. I kept running away from myself because I couldn't stand myself. I couldn't live life on life's terms, because I was embarrassed to. So I thought drinking was my escape. And I was 18 when I first came into the rooms, but I didn't understand why I was in trouble, and I had to go to a meeting to get well. I thought everyone drank like that, and they didn't. I lost that job. I was overseas in Japan representing my country and my company and myself, and I came back embarrassed and ashamed to New Zealand, my head between my legs, and I just wanted the ground to swallow me up. And I just kept running. I then went on to Europe, and everyone drank uncontrollably, which is great. I thought, woohoo, I've found my new normal. But then it got worse. I got into drugs. I went to some very dark places, and yeah, enough was enough there. I then went to Australia, still running away from myself and not knowing that I was taking all the carnage with me. I was carrying all that excess baggage from the past with me, and I thought I was running away from myself. While in Australia, my ex-husband and I had a business. Because of our alcoholism, we both drank really badly, a bottle of whiskey a day. And then, it wasn't nice drinking. We would then get ugly and argue and tear each other apart physically as well as verbally. So it wasn't a good look. Our marriage fell apart and so did the business, and you would have thought that was rock bottom for most people, but nope, I did the other geographical and ran away again. I did the Pacific. I thought, oh, okay, nobody will know me here. I will start again, and no, my alcoholism followed me to the Pacific. And I did manage to give up, however, for 5 years because I wanted to have my beautiful son, and that was probably the greatest gift of all because I did manage to do it, but I wasn't in the program. I white-knuckled it. But I'm so grateful that he is nothing like me today, and I can be here for him today instead of running away from myself. I had to get honest in this program, and it was very hard for me to do. I didn't want to look at myself or face my reality. I came from a long line of alcoholics, and my dad passed away 10 years ago from this. I didn't want that for me. I was 2 years in sobriety, and I just hoped and prayed that I would stay in this. It saved my life. I was in the aviation industry for 17 years, and they got me into this program and said the only way, because I said, oh my God, I thought I'd lost my job and had to hand in my badge and that was it for me. But they said, you know what, do whatever it takes to get well and we'll be here waiting for you. You decide to come back, and the only way you can repay us is by helping the next person who needs this. And so that's what I do today. I'm a grateful alcoholic, and I'm glad you're all here because I need my vitamin A daily, and without it I will pay up. And coming up this year, God willing, November 30 is my sobriety date, and that will be 11 years, and that's a miracle. I'm so grateful, and if you're listening, pick up the phone, talk to someone. We're all here. We've all been where you are. Just let us help you. You don't need to do it alone. God bless everyone. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Lulu. You've been listening to Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We've had members of our fellowship in, and we've been sharing our experience, strength and hope, about our journeys of recovery from alcoholism. If you've identified with our speakers and what we've been talking about and you'd like to do something about your drinking, you can log on to aa.org.nz, and under the meetings button there's a list of all meetings right throughout the Greater Auckland area and up and down the country. Or you can phone 0800 AA Works, and that will put you in contact with an AA member in your local area. We'll be back here again next Sunday at 10:45 on 104.6 Planet FM with Alcoholics Anonymous, AA, meeting on air. And we'll close our meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.